We're on Daf Lamed Amud Beis, and we're talking about again, you know, this concept of Tziruf Edim that we've been discussing for a while. And we got up to Nardoi. Nardoi is going to give us the bottom line, you know, it's the final halacha. How do we paskin? So let's see if we can find Nardoi. If you count up from the bottom of Lamed Amud Beis, about 8 lines, you'll see Nardoi. The line starts with Omar Le.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the last statement of Rav Nachman to Rav Huna. He said, you know, you ask questions, then you give answers, and then you completely reject the answers. Anyway, Nardoi, the bottom line from the Chachmei Nardoi is Amri, they say, Bein Hodach Arodo, Bein Hodach Aralva, Bein Halvach Aralva, Bein Halvach Arodo, Mitztarfos. In all cases, we can connect the Edim, and this is based on the fact that the Beis Din has two different witnesses, and they can put those two witnesses together. So let's go through the four cases. Hodach ar hodah, and we said that in Hodach ar hodah, in order to be mitzarif the two witnesses, we need that the second witness notify the first witness that he got this hodah, and not only that, but the Lova, who made this admission, he has to notify the second, the Monday aide, that he had already given an admission, he had submitted an admission in front of the Sunday aide, and then he has to go back to the Sunday aide and tell the Sunday aide that he had given that he will give his admission tomorrow, so we know it's all on the same mama, if you remember, because we needed Tziruf on the same mama. But that's all before Nardoi. Nardoi are just completely eliminating all those qualifications. Just one aide testifies on a Hodah on Sunday, the other on a Hodah on Monday, and Beis Din will put it together. They'll add it, calculate it together. Or, for example, we have Halva Acher Halva. So there was one loan on Sunday, there was another loan on Monday. There were two different loans. And yet we can be mitzarif the two, because what we know is that the plaintiff has a claim against the defendant for whatever sum it is. Again, he only has one aid on each halva, but nevertheless, when we add the two together, we can certainly come up with a certain sum of money that is the common denominator between the two witnesses. Then we get to a case called halva acher hodah, which by definition is two different mamons, right? Right, so let's see, did I skip one second? I have Hodah Achar Hodah, correct? And then we have Hodah Achar Halvah. Oh, so Hodah Achar Halvah, we said that in all likelihood, that Hodah was on the Halvah of the day before. So that wasn't such a problem. But when you say Halvah Achar Halvah, and even Halvah Achar Hodah, I mean, those are cases where the second testimony is not connected to the first testimony, right? Because there were two different halvahs, or alternatively, there was hodah on Sunday on some mamon that he owed him earlier, and then there was halva on Monday. So clearly, the two different mamons. But nevertheless, says Nardoi, the bottom line is mitzarfos. We can add this all together, and the defendant will have to pay the plaintiff keman. And who does this reflect? Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, because Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha was the one who rejected the entire concept of Tziruf Re'iyah, and he said that if you have two different testimonies on two different mamons for two different days, we can add them together, sell them together, and therefore the Tovea will win his claim against the Nitva. Again, he won't be able to claim twice, if you follow it. I mean, he may have extended two loans, but unfortunately he only has one witness on each of these two loans. But when we add the two loans together, but based on the two witnesses, so we get a certain sum of money, which is common to both of them. Okay, now we're going to start sort of a new sugya. It's related to the previous sugya, but it requires an introduction. And this introduction has to do with two concepts in Edus, which is called the interrogation of the Edus. And one is called Chakiros, and one is called Bedikos. Are you familiar at all with those two concepts? Chakiros and Bedikos?
Investigating, you have to.
Right, but do you know the difference between the two? Okay, so this is important. Chakiros, which comprise seven questions, are absolutely critical for any Edus. The Bedikos are already let's call it optional interrogations of various questions of nuances, which the judges have the license to ask these questions and offer these investigations. But the absolutely critical investigations are the chakiros, and they're made up of seven questions. All these seven questions have to do with what's called makom uzman. Where did it take place and when did it take place? Mm-hmm. Now, in the case of makom, there's really only one question. Just tell us where it happened. The other six questions are all about zman, are all about the time. Why? Because the way they transmitted time in the Gemara's time was first which Shavuah it was, which means which year in the Shemitah cycle, and then they would ask which month of the year, and then which week of the month, and then which day of the week, and then with the morning, the afternoon, the evening, and so forth and so on. So in order to establish exactly when this so-called event, supposed event took place and where it took place, we had to ask seven questions of makom and zman. Now, all these questions are necessary to pinpoint the makom and zman in order to set up hazoma, which is very paradoxical. We don't want hazoma. We don't want two other eidim to come in and accuse the first eidim of lying. But nevertheless, the Torah requires that eidus be eidus hatayochel hazima, that the testimony is such that it's built into the testimony is the possibility of hazoma. And the only way that you could have a possibility of hazoma is if you pinpoint exactly when and where the so-called event took place. Then the second pair of eidim could say, well, when at that time, where you were with us, you know, halfway across this continent. There's no way that you could have possibly have seen this eidus. Excuse me. Now, above and beyond chakiras, there's something called bedikos. So we'll give a few examples of bedikos, and then we'll try to explain why bedikos. I mean, we've already covered all the chakiras. Why do we go beyond? So, for example, the judges can interrogate the eidim, and they'll ask them certain details about the action. For example, let's say in a murder case, was the victim sitting under a tree, and what tree was it sitting under? So, let's say, for example, the first witness will say he was sitting under a fig tree, and the second witness will say he was sitting under a date tree. Now that has nothing to do with hazama whatsoever, but it already establishes that there is an inconsistency between the two witnesses. Or for example, they might ask them details about the tree. Let's say they both say it was under a fig tree. Well, were the figs very large? Were they very small? Or, for example, what color were the clothing that the Rotzeach or the Nirtzach were wearing? Was it white clothing? Was it black clothing? All these bedikos are totally irrelevant to Hazama, because the Mazimim are not going to say anything about the color of this, but they're denying that the whole story took place. Obviously, the whole thing is a figment, is a fabrication. They're going to only say that these witnesses were with us elsewhere in a different makom at that time. And that, so all we need from the first pair of eidim to make them vulnerable and subject to hazom is the answers to the seven questions of chakiros, which means pinpoint, makom, and zman. Why would the judges go beyond those seven, which are absolute requirements, and investigate them beyond those seven into the area called bedikos? And the answer is because the judges want to make absolutely sure, especially in a capital crime where the you know the nidon's life is on the line, they want to really see if they can plug away, so to speak, at these eidim until they finally convince themselves that there's an inconsistency between the two eidim. There's some sort of hakhasha, a contradiction in which one eid contradicts the second eid. Because the law is that in both chakiros and bedikos, this is very important, if there is a contradiction between the two witnesses, we throw out the testimony.
So all seven things, like what if seven things and five of them, they agree, and two they would have didn't. Does that throw?
Yes, once there's a discrepancy between the two Edim, even in Bedikos, even about the kind of figs that were on the tree under which the victim sat, you know, William Tell, you know, say, even that discrepancy would completely blow the Edus out of the water, because the Torah says Hine Nachon Adovim. Nachon means Mechuvon, yeah.
But you said it wouldn't be vulnerable to being accused of being aiding Zomim.
Right, that's what I'm telling you, that Bedikos are not necessary. For example, if the Edim were interrogated with Chakiros, seven questions, they pinpoint Makom and Zman, and the judges decide that's it, we don't have to go beyond that, those interrogations are satisfactory, so then everything's fine. The judges now have an option, they have a license, which the Torah allows the judges to do, to go beyond the seven. The seven are absolute requirements, and they got to get answers to every one of the seven questions, and there could be no contradiction, no discrepancy between the two Edom on the seven questions. Now the ball is in the judge's court. They can decide to take advantage of the license that the Torah gives them to go beyond Chakiris, if they so desire, no one's forcing them, to ask for Bedikos. And in the Bedikos, they really put the Edom over the coals, so to speak, and they ask him nuances and details. Now, another difference is if, let's say, for example, in one of the Bedikos, the aide says, I don't know.
Exactly.
Fine. No problem. Yeah. But if he does give an answer, then we have to compare his answer, his response, to that of the other aide.
Yeah.
So just like the judges don't have to ask Bedikos, the witnesses don't have to answer Bedikos. They want to convince the judges that they tell you the truth, and so the judges said to them, well, was he wearing a white shirt or a blue? So, like in the Edom's mind, they don't know where this is going, so they start thinking, and maybe if they falsified this whole story, they'll say, oh yeah, he definitely had white shirt or black shirt, and then guess what, the other witness said he had the other color.
But it could also be an accidental, I mean, the guy forgot, you know, I'm
so that's, so
I don't if remember he, things, you know, I might
that's say, what I'm saying, what he can't forget Makom Isman, he cannot,
right.
He must answer the seven Chakirs, pinpoint.
Yeah.
As far as Bedikah is concerned, the witnesses have the right to say, I don't know. I don't remember what color shirt he was.
That's what I was thinking when I asked you five out of seven. Like, what if the guy, was it a fig tree? And the guy says, I don't know what figs look like.
No, that wouldn't be possible.
So again, that wouldn't be one of the seven. Because again, figs have nothing to do with Makom Isman. Again, it's really only two questions that we're asking in the Chakiros. Like, for example, in our context, you would say, you know, it's February 15th at 9 a.m. That would suffice. You know, maybe you'd have to add 2020. I don't know what you... But in the old days, it was complicated. They had to ask six questions until they finally pinpointed the time. But they're all really one question. If the Edim say, I don't know, was it on this day or that day? We throw out the Edim. Was it in this place or that place? 9th Avenue or 10th Avenue? We don't remember. Throw out the Edim. They must remember the exact time and the exact location so that they'll be vulnerable. They're exposed to Hazom. Because if the Edim is not exposed to Hazom, it's not Edim. Now we get to Bedikos. Nobody asked the judges to investigate, interrogate them on Bedikos. What color shirt was he wearing? That's not Makom Isman. But the judges decided, you know what? Maybe we'll catch these guys on a fib and we'll see that they're not, you know, they're working in cahoots, these two Edom. So they made up a Makom Isman together. The whole thing was a fabrication. And they think they can get away with it. Well, we're going to interrogate you further. That's the judge's discretion. It's not obligatory. And now the judges, if they exercise their discretion, if they find now a discrepancy about some nuance in which this aide says it was under a blue tree and he says it was under a white tree, he says the figs were large and he says the figs were small, we throw out the aides. The aidim in those cases of Bedikos have the right to say, we don't remember, we don't know. They have to be very careful to know exactly when it happened and where it happened, but beyond that, we can't expect them to remember all the nuances and nitty-gritty details.
So were they instructed beforehand when they gave their initial for the Chakira of the consequences if they.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I have a feeling in my bones that we're not going to read them the list of rules here. It's not like in constitutional law. Maybe we have to read you all your constitutional rights. You have the right to remain silent and stuff like that. I don't think we're going to tell the Eidim that, because again, our whole purpose is to try to see if they're really telling the truth. So if you feed them too much information, if they know too much, for example, if you tell them you don't have to answer these questions, we're just asking questions. So these two false witnesses are gonna all say, we plead the fifth, I don't remember this, I don't remember that. They'll say any of that to any of the Vedikos. Well, so it's better, I think, if we get them in a moment, or you know, if we catch them off guard, and hopefully in a moment of truth, but again, we may find that there's a discrepancy, and then we have to throw out the Eidos.
I'm more concerned about the guy, not the one who is... has evil intent in giving his testimony, but the one who, you know, it's Hakira, it's got to be, you know, Zman and Makom, but he doesn't, you know, he forgets a little bit about what time it was.
So if he's an honest person, you know, he shouldn't make up a story, oh, it was under a fig tree.
No, this is my recollection. Then
he's an honest guy, he doesn't remember, and that's fine. Uh-huh. No problem. Uh-huh. Again, just like the judges did not have to ask the Bedikas, the Eidim did not have to answer to the Bedikas. But they have to realize that if they answer to the Bedikas, what happens is now the judges have a right to compare notes between one Eid and the other. So far, so good? Okay. That's introduction number one. Okay. Now we get to introduction number two. So let me tell you a little history. The history was that people of means were very, very hesitant to give loans, because in order to guarantee that the loan will be repaid, they needed witnesses. Because if they just claim, hey, you borrowed $1,000 from me, the guy's going to blow me away. He's going to say, go fly a car. I never borrowed any money from him. So they need the witnesses. Otherwise, why should I extend you a loan? I'm going to give you $1,000 for a loan, tie up my money, maybe I'll kiss it goodbye. There are rich people, by the way, they give a loan and they kiss it goodbye. They know they'll never get it back. But that's not what we're talking about. We're trying to encourage people to lend money, because lending money is a great mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that's probably even greater than giving charity.
Right.
So how do we encourage them? Now imagine, if I'm going to want to lend money, and I know I need two witnesses, and Beis Din is going to interrogate these witnesses, put them over the coals, as I said before, then you know what? At the end of the day, they're going to find some, you know, some ilah, we say in Hebrew, some excuse or some, you know, some little nuance of a discrepancy, a white shirt, a blue shirt, a, you know, under these fig trees, under those fig trees. It doesn't pay for me to lend money. In order to lend money, you need security. You know, today, if you go to banks, the banks want all sorts of securities. They, I don't know if you've ever taken a mortgage from a bank here, and I'm sure it's the same anywhere in the world, but here I know for sure because I did it a few times. They ask you to sign a million and one documents. Basically, you give them the shirt off your back. It's amazing that they don't come and confiscate your home even before you default on the loan. So anybody who lends money needs security. You know, today they even have insurance. You know, you could pay an insurance company to back up your loan, just in case. So back in the days of Chazal, the only really insurance that a malva has is the two witnesses. And now you're telling me the witnesses could be subject to such interrogation of makom and zman, and then the bedikas, and what color this, what color that. You know what? Malival itzarizu. What do I need this headache? I don't want to lend any money. That's not a good situation. There are people out there who need loans. And that's the way the Jewish community is built. You know, you have the haves and the have-nots, or the not-yet-haves. You know, give them a chance with a loan, maybe they'll put their life together financially. So this is what we want to encourage. So that's called, in the Gemara's language, shalotin ol delet bifnei lovin, not to close the door in front of the borrowers. Now, in order to not close the door in front of the borrowers, which means that the malva, the lender, is going to close the door, slam the door in his face and say, I'm not going to lend you any money, we have to give the malva a little extra security. So what we did was, we said the following, that the Eidim who will testify in monetary law, only in monetary law. This has no impact on capital crimes or anything of that sort, or criminal crimes in general, but in civil law, in monetary law, we're going to do away with bedikas and chakiris. We're not going to require bedikas and chakiris. I'll just read to you. He has a little bit of an introduction, and he writes, Amru chachamin, she'ein dini momenos tzrichim drisha v'chakira. That in dini momenos, we're going to accept the testimony of two witnesses. Again, they both have to tell a story, and we're going to compare their stories, but we're not going to require drisha v'chakira. Kidei shelo tinol delas b'fnei lovin. So not to close the door in front of the borrowers, make it more feasible or attractive or comfortable for the malvin to extend halvos. And this is going to be a sugya that we'll get to on Daf Lamed Beis in just two blot. Now, if when the two witnesses come into the court and Bezin says, you know, tell me what you have to say. Remember, we spoke in the Mishnah that each aid is taken separately, privately. You remember that? And they ask him to present your testimony. So at that point, it could very well be that in the course of their testimony, the aidim will reveal certain details when they're telling the story that will lend their aidus to hazama. Do you follow? They may say, well, you know, they want to convince us that this is a real story, so they'll tell us when it happened and where it happened. They may even tell us more details. That's all something that they, how should I say, voluntarily offer on their own, because we don't have drishas of chakiris. Bezdin, after this whole takoda, this enactment, Bezdin is not required to ask these interrogations. But keep in mind that if the Eidim, you know, tell a story, everything they tell in the story is recorded, so to speak, meaning every detail has to work out with the other witness. And for sure, if they tell us that it happened in such a place, such a time, we could have Hazama. But if we do find some sort of hakosha, some sort of contradiction based on what the information that they offer, toch kidei, within the framework of their conveying their testimony, if there is a contradiction and a conflict between the two witnesses, then according to most Rishonim, not saying all Rishonim, but most Rishonim say in that case, we have to throw out the testimony. So again, we're not going to require drishas for chakiris, but if there is some sort of hakosha, some sort of contradiction between the two witnesses on information that they offered us voluntarily, then we're going to have to throw out the testimony because there's a contradiction between the witnesses. And that's the opinion of the Ravan, who was one of the Balei HaTosfos, and the Sefer HaTrumas, and the Rambam, and the Adrama, and the Meiri, and the Muki Yosef. I mean, the list goes on and on. I can read you the whole list. However, in the Sefer HaTrumas, he quotes a Yesh Omrim. And that opinion says no, that We don't have to throw out the Eidus, even if they contradict one another, because all that information that they gave us doesn't register in Beis Din. What registers in Beis Din, what the Beis Din, the judges hear, is only what they have to hear. Any additional information that was voluntarily offered by the witnesses is not registered, it's not written down by the court stenographer. So, but again, let's leave out the Yesh Omrim in the Sefer Trumas. I just want to say that all the Rishonim almost unanimously, straight across the board, say that if the Eidim offer some information as they are submitting their testimony, and we're talking about a monetary case, all that information is very binding, and if there's any discrepancy, what we call akhosha, between the two witnesses on any of that voluntary information that they offered, then we'll have to throw out the witnesses. Okay, now we're up to introduction number 3. Okay, this is the easiest one. And that is Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds that although in Dine Momenos we do away with Bidikos, but Chakiros we take very seriously. Meaning, if I understand correctly, and we're going to have to go through Rabbi Yehuda's Shita inside, he's not so worried about the lovim and the malvim. You know, he says we can calm them down if we do away with the institution of bidikos. And if, for example, the edim individually will offer any answers to any questions about bidikos, and that's, they don't have to, as we said before, they could say we don't remember, but if they offer that information is irrelevant to the case. If, on the other hand, there is a discrepancy in the makom uzman, then Rabbi Yehuda says we have to throw out the witnesses, even in dine momonos. And that's where we start our Gemara today. Amar Rav Yehuda, do you have that?
Yeah.
Oh, Amar Rav Yehuda, you have it?
No.
No, Amar Rav Yehuda is about 7 lines up from the bottom. 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 lines up from the bottom of Lamed Amud Beis. Amar Rav Yehuda. And again, we're talking. Okay. Keep in mind, we're talking now about Dine Momonos. Okay, Edus Hamatcheshes Zu Es Zu Bibidikos. So, in other words, each one of the two witnesses gave a different, response to bidikos, meaning to questions that are not critical and they're not about makom uzman, kshera bedine monos. We overlook, we ignore that discrepancy in bidikos with regard to monetary law. Because in monetary law, we're going to talk about Chakiros and not Bedikos, according to Rav Yehuda. So again, let's go over this. According to Rav Yehuda, two Edom contradict each other as to when... wait a minute, listen to my question, and then this is my quiz. See if you can get the answer. Two Edom in Dine Momonos contradict each other about the location of where this took place. Well, you're shaking your head. What does that mean?
It means you don't accept their testimony.
Correct. We disqualify their testimony because that's already chakiros. I'll give you another question. Two witnesses contradict each other about the time that it took place. Throw it out. However, let's say that the two witnesses testified and there was discrepancy in their testimony about the color of the shirt of the malva or the lova.
Ignore that.
We accept their testimony. Why? Because that part of the testimony is not relevant to Hazama. And according to Rav Yehuda, any part of a testimony in Dine Momonos, which is not relevant to Hazama, what we call Bedikos, then we don't even, it doesn't register. It's just, are you familiar with the word in Hebrew, miutar? Miutar means it's completely superfluous. It's unnecessary and it doesn't register. Why? Because in Dine Momonos we don't ask bedikos. Rav Yehuda agrees that in chakiros, you know, which is makom and zman, that's critical because we want to set up hazama. So he says here that according to Rav Yehuda in Dine Momonos, habedikos kalos with a kuf, which means they're less important than chakiros, and therefore ein hakosha poselos b'hem. A contradiction in bedikos does not undermine the testimony. It still remains a valid testimony because that's not the main part of the edus. The anything that's relevant to just details and nuances, you could always say that the witnesses were not very careful about that. They didn't check that out. What color was he? They didn't pay any attention to it. You know, a lot of things that we see, we don't pay any attention to. Like, for example, if I were to ask you, I don't know, maybe I'm just doing a test case, and I may fail, but let's try it for the fun of it. Have you ever seen the clock inside the Beis Medrash?
I've never seen a clock.
Ah, so you never saw it. Okay. So, but Gershon, you saw it?
Yes.
Okay. So I can only test Gershon because...
Today?
Yeah, because Bob says he doesn't even know that there's a clock in the Beis Medrash. Okay. All right. Good. So you're not relevant to my test case. I was hoping that you knew about the clock. Okay, Gershon knows about the clock.
Yeah.
So now, Gershon, I'm going to ask you the following questions.
Yeah.
Do you know if the clock has numbers or Roman numerals or some other...
Numbers.
Is there all the numbers around the clock? Well, let me ask you, does it have a second hand? Is it white? Is it black?
It has a second hand. I don't know where it is. It's got a second hand.
Now, I'll tell you, why am I asking these questions? Because you can look at something 1,000 times and yet it doesn't really register because you're focused on you know what time of the day it is. Do you care whether it's, you know, like for example the 3, 6, 9, or 12? You know, they don't have numbers. They just have lines. You know, does it have a second end? It doesn't have a second end. You know,
never noticed when you have a second.
You don't notice it. And for sure, if I would ask you the name of the company, which might be written on the face of the clock, for sure you're not going to remember, right? So these are bedikos. Bedikos means that you're interested. You're focused in X. You want to see if Reuven lends Shimon $1,000 and how much time he gives him to repay the loan. Those are the main primary points in the Maisa Shoya, in the Sipra Maisa. Other details you don't pay attention to, and therefore Rav Yehuda says that even if there's a discrepancy with regard to these bedikos, he says ein ha'edim, ein derech ha'edim l'dagdek bedini momenos. The dagdek means to pay meticulous care and attention. El be'ikar momen. They're only interested in the momen. Shalom lefachot v'lol arbot al skum. Make sure, you know, this thing you're going to remember. You know, was it $1,000? Was it $10,000? How much was the loan? Oh, masha enken kishahukhishu bechakiros. If they don't coincide, the two witnesses, as far as the place and the time, he says, even though they both remember it was $1,000 for, you know, a 10-year loan or whatever it is, but we have to throw out their aids because according to Rabbi Yehuda, when it comes to Hazama, we have to have the possibility of Hazama, and therefore if the Edom are not careful about Mokum and Zman, we have to throw out the aids, even though it's Dini Momenos. Because you and I would have said, if not for Rabbi Yehuda, as we said in our introduction, that maybe in Dini Momenos we completely ignore the Hakiros. And, you know, if the Edim volunteer those details, then that's mutar, as we said before. That's completely unnecessary, superfluous. The Gemara now clarifies. Omar Rav, Mistavra Milsid Rabbi Yehuda, I would accept, I'm attracted to accept Rabbi Yehuda's logic. Mistavra means it's compelling. Milsa, the words of Rabbi Yehuda, be aid. Echad be echad omer be'arniki shchora v'echad omer be'arniki levana. Now what happens is that when the malve extends the loan to the lova, he puts the money into a satchel or a purse, or it could be a bag, whatever it is. And one aide, when he was testifying, he offered the information that the Arniki, this purse, was black, and the other one said no, it was white. I mean, they weren't, you know, interrogated together. If you remember that we interrogate them privately, silently, each one separately. And says Rava, I can really, really, we used to say as a kid, dig it. Dig it meaning I can really understand it. You know, I dig what Rabbi Yehuda says with regard to the color of the purse. Again, because as we said before, these are bedikos, and we don't expect the Edom to be very meticulous about wondering what color was the purse. Avo, but what happens if one of the Edom says mana shachar, that the money itself, and we'll talk about different colors of matbeos, of coins, one says they were black coins, and the other says that they were white coins. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen this in coins, but sometimes coins, even in our, you know, 21st century, they get dark after use. You know, if you have I know in America, for example, the pennies very often get very, very dark. Not so much other coins, because they now use a kind of a silver substance which doesn't really rub out. But in any event, most people on the market back in the times of the Talmud, they really were eager to get what's called a mana levana, which means basically these are new coins that were recently minted, maybe in the last year, in the last 5 years, I don't know, but they're new coins. Those were worth more on the market. Now, if that be the case, then the Edom should be very meticulous in checking out exactly what was the situation, what was the state of being of these coins, of these matbeot. And to our surprise, and in this case to our disappointment, one aide says they were old coins, and the other aide says they were new coins. And that's a real serious discrepancy, because if the coin has been in use for a long period of time, it starts darkening, it gets tarnished.
So you can differ when it comes to the color of the purse, but not when it comes to the color.
Because in the case of the purse, it's irrelevant, totally irrelevant here. The Avis is Reuven lent Shimon a mana. Now, we want to know what the coins of the mana were. We want to know, first of all, what the, you know, how many coins there were, of course. You know, he gave him 100 coins, he gave him 50 coins. That certainly is basic. But we also have to know the state of the coins. And here, one aide gives us one impression, and the other, the aide impression, says, Rava ein mitztarfin. In this case, the contradiction between the two witnesses, one who says they were new coins and the other who says they were old coins, is absolutely, shall I say, undermining. It torpedoes the Avis. It's hakosha. Hakosha means that this is something that touches on the very essence of the Avis, and this is a detail that they should have been. Exactly. And it disqualifies their Avis. Now, there's a long discussion in the Achronim here about whether Rava is interpreting Rabbi Yehuda or he's giving us his own opinion, because he opens up with the phrase Mistavra Milseid Rabbi Yehuda. It sounds like he's talking from his own logic, and he's saying, you know what, I would accept Rabbi Yehuda in the following cases, but I would differ in another case. So it might very well be that this is Rava's own opinion, and it's not the opinion of Rav Yehuda. Now, from this whole analysis of Rav Yehuda, Rav, and so forth and so on, we could ask the following question. Edus hamacheshes zu es zu, betseva ha'arniki. If there's a contradiction between the two witnesses about the color of the purse, what would be the deal in a parallel case in dine nefashos, in a capital crime? Because again, keep in mind that our discussion was about what kind of a case?
Dine
Mamonos. If you're telling me, well, this is going to be kosher in Dine Mamonos, then what you're telling me, that had it been in a parallel situation, a contradiction in Dine Nefashos, we'd have to throw out the witnesses.
Right.
So therefore, the Gemara says the following, V'arnaki shchora b'dine nefashos lo. Are you telling me lo means it's disqualified, lo means we cannot accept it? Are you implying to me that if there was some contradiction,
right,
in the bedikos with regard to the color of the arniki, again, you know, in dine nefashos, we're not going to talk about the color of the arniki, right? The arniki in dine momentus means the utensil with which he transferred the money from the pocket of the lender to the borrower. But in dine nefashos, we might not know what was the utensil that was used to murder the victim,
yeah,
which again is not one of the chakiros, because you know whatever the murder weapon was is not relevant to time or place. So therefore, if we have a bedika, which would be in this case, what was the nature of the murder weapon, or what color was the murder weapon, then from Rav Yehuda we could be medayik, we could come to the conclusion that that discrepancy in bedikos, had it been a capital case, would disqualify the Avis. And the Gemara is not happy about that. Va'omar Rav Chizda says the following, and we're talking now about a capital, we're talking about a murder crime.
Mm-hmm.
Echad Omer, one of the two witnesses, says Besayef Harogo. He killed his victim with a sword. The Echad Omer Be'aririm Harogo. Aririm is, I think, what we call a spear.
Okay.
So, what?
Only a sword and a dagger.
A dagger, oh, okay. So that's interesting. He calls it a dagger, I would have called it a spear. In any event, they're two different murder weapons. And Rav Chizda says, Ein Zen Nochon. This is not nochon. Nochon means a coincidence or a perfect alignment of the two witnesses, and we cannot put these two witnesses together to form a unit of testimony, because here this is what we call a contradiction in bedikas that really touches on the main Eidus. We want to ask him, how did he commit this crime? How did he murder him? So the murder weapon is very critical. I don't know if, gentlemen, you've ever seen the old movies with lawyers and stuff. What were they called? L.A. Lawyers. You remember all those stuff? And they always want to see the murder weapon. You know, the murder weapon is number one, item number one, you know, and all that stuff. So the murder weapon is important. However, Eid Echad Omer Kalev Shchorim, the Echad Omer Kalev Levanim, if one witness says that, let's say, the murderer was wearing black clothes, and the other eight says, no, the murderer was wearing white clothes. Or the same thing would be if the victim, you know, is Harezed Nachon. Nachon means we consider it as qualified eidus. We can join the two witnesses together to form a kat, and therefore, as a kat, they can testify. Why? Because this is called a hakosha in bedikos. But what kind of bedikos? These are bedikos that are not part of the ikar. They're not primary or essential to the testimony. And if they're not critical to the testimony, then it's irrelevant.
You're saying
kelav
is begadim.
The word kelim in Shas usually means begadim. Sometimes it means utensils, but usually it means clothing. Here it means clothing. So what clothing? What were the color? What was the color of the shirt that the murderer was wearing? That's not part of the murder itself. You know, you talk about the murder weapon. That's ikar. That's primary. That's essential to the criminal act. What color his shirt was is totally irrelevant.
That's puzzling because certainly...
I can't hear you. Puzzling?
Puzzling. Because the color of the guy's clothes would be critical to identifying him. Like he was wearing all white, he was wearing all black.
No, I can identify him by his face. In other words, I know who he was. Yeah. You know, show me five mugshots and I'll tell you which one he is, you know. But as far as what color clothes is concerned, that's not relevant to the... In other words, what we're saying is that In the story, what details, or what should I use, what word can I use, what elements or details would somehow impact on the crime itself? Do you follow what I mean? We have to differentiate between the story of the crime and external, shall I say, nuances or details that are not part of the crime itself. That's who is this Rav? Am I correct? Who is this? Oh, Rav Chisda. Sorry, this is Rav Chisda. So let's understand what the Gemara's question is. Just to appreciate the Gemara's question here. We have a statement of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's talking about what kind of testimony in what case? Dinei Mamonos. Everybody have that? And he says, well, you know what, it's not critical to know what the color of the purse was when he handed over the money. We have to know the color of the coins themselves. That's Ikar. But the implication is that Rabbi Yehuda is saying this is the kula, this is the leniency with regard to testimony in monetary law, implying that had it been a capital case and you would find some sort of parallel to what color was the purse and there was a discrepancy, we'd have to throw it out of the water. But that's against Rav Chisda. Because Rav Chisda was the one who said that in a capital crime, like for example a murder trial, the Eidim are required to get it straight without any discrepancy with regard to the murder weapon, because that's an essential part of the testimony. That would be like the color of the coins. But they don't have to get it right with regard to external details that don't touch on the criminal act, because the criminal act is neither implemented or enhanced by the color of the shirt that he was wearing.
And that apparently is the halacha.
But that's against Rav Yehuda. Yeah. You know, we're really in trouble here because we want to somehow reconcile Rav Yehuda with Rav Chisda. The Gemara is not interested. If it's unavoidable, then what can you do? But if all things are equal, then we would really want to figure out if Rav Yehuda and Rav Chisda are on the same page. If I could use that phrase, have you ever heard that phrase? It's like one of these. It's a new phrase now. In my childhood, they never used that. I never heard that phrase when I was a youth. They're on the same page. And now they even have another phrase. They're on the same radar screen. I never had that phrase.
How old is the new knife? I've heard it.
Yeah? In your youth you heard it? Or more recently? Oh, this is like one of those...
Now they say at the end of the day.
At the end of the day, right. Or they'll ask you that, they'll say, that's sick. So when I was a kid, if you said something that's sick, you know, get rid of it. When they say sick, they mean S-I-C, and it's really a good thing. So phrases have changed. And anyway, so the Gemara says, you know what? I don't have any way of solving your problem. All I can tell you is Gavra, Gavra, Karamis, you're asking a question, a contradiction between one Gavra and another, one person and another. Rabbi Yehuda has his opinion, and Rabbi Yehuda says that if it's not critical, like the color of the purse, or in our case in Dini Nefashos, the color of the shirt he's wearing, we got to throw it out. Why? Because they offered information, and there's a contradiction in the two statements. Was he wearing a white shirt or a black shirt? We got to throw that out. However, Rav Chisda holds that even in Dini Nefashos, we can accept and validate testimony as long as the discrepancy is not relevant to the nature of the crime. Anything that's part of the crime, that's Iker Eidus, that's primary. But other information that doesn't touch on the crime itself, that's already left out, and we don't have to have a perfect alignment between the two witnesses. So that's called Gavra a Gavra Karamis, which means you cannot ask a question from one opinion to the other. And therefore, we have a machlokas. You know, all of Shas, we don't, we're not happy about machlokas. We don't like debates, but this was a debate. And it's a very valid debate when you think about it, because, you know, from one opinion, from Rabbi Yehuda's perspective, there's information that even though it's irrelevant, we're still very uncomfortable because they offered this information and there's a discrepancy here. Rabbi Yehuda is not comfortable with the fact that that one of the Edom says that the murderer was wearing a white shirt and the other says he was wearing a black shirt. It's very uncomfortable, and that's not really Edus Mechuvenis. And the other opinion says, what difference does it make? It's totally irrelevant to the case. We need Edus on the case, and anything that's primary in the case, this is not relevant to. It's not. It has no primacy.
Is Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Chisda, are they equivalent in terms of?
They're both Amoraim. Yeah, I'm not sure if they were contemporaries or not. Rav Yehuda was relatively early. He was a Talmud of Shmuel and Rav and Rav Yochanan, the first generation. Rav Chisda may have been a drop later, but also that I'm pretty sure they overlapped. You know, they were contemporaries.
You wouldn't use the term Gavra Gavra if they weren't of the same status, correct?
I would. Yeah. Well, in general, I would say if it was a Tana and Amora, you'd not use Gavra Gavra. Now, what about within the Amoraim? You know, if you have the early Amoraim and the later Amoraim, that needs to be ironed out. You know, that's something else. Now the Gemara quotes a third opinion, and that's Nardoi. Right? Nardoi, we mentioned earlier, with the Chachmei Narda. Amri, they say, Afilu Echad Omer Mona Shachar, Echad Omer Mona Lovan Mitztarfin. They have a third opinion here with regard to Dini Mominos, and we'll see exactly how that impacts on Dini Nefashos. But in any event, what they're saying here is that, you know what, it's not even relevant to determine whether or not these were old coins that he lent him or new coins. Again, even though this is part of the Ikar Eidus, you know, the loan itself, but you can lend money with old coins or with new coins. Now, I'm not exactly sure whether or not we should ask the following question. Is there some discrepancy in the overall value between new coins and old coins? You understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. If it is a discrepancy, then Lechora, the love, was going to have to pay back, you know, whatever the coins were. If it was more expensive new coins, you know, he should have to pay that back. So that's a point that I'm a little confused about. Hopefully by tomorrow I'll be able to research it a little bit further.
Doesn't there again, it looks like that's the halakha too. There's a little aleph there.
Yeah.
Does that indicate that's a halakha then, or that's an accepted opinion?
It's very tricky. Unless you really do the research, you never could know. Because sometimes they put a little letter there, and then you open it up, and to your surprise, you come to the opposite conclusion. Yeah, it's not reliable. I mean, again, it's if you're shooting from the hip, it's a good first indication, but
not necessarily.
You know, it's sort of like if you go to a physician and he hasn't yet done the tests that he needs, blood tests and a workup, he'll give you what he thinks. You know, he thinks it's bronchitis, maybe you have pneumonia. He'll give you a first opinion. You know. But until you get the results of the test, it's not really reliable. I don't know if that's a good muscle, but you got my point, I hope.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let's ask the following question. What would be the relationship between Rav Yehuda and Nardoi? Because if you remember, the distinction between between black coins and white coins, that distinction was offered by Rava. And Rava was very upset about two witnesses that have a discrepancy on the color of the coins. Rav Yehuda never made that comment, per se. Rav Yehuda only said in general that if there's a kosher in Bidikos, Shera, the Eidus is acceptable.
Yeah.
It could be that Rabbi Yehuda, when he made that statement, it was an absolute statement without any exception, even in the case of white coins versus black coins. We don't know. In fact, I have a note here that the Ramban says that Rabbi Yehuda sover kenardoi. Umasha pirish Rava, that Rava says, no, if it's black coins and white coins, you have to throw out the Eidus. That's not Rabbi Yehuda. That is Rava. So let's not accuse Rabbi Yehuda of the statement that Rava made. And Rava says if there's a contradiction in the color of the coins, we've got to throw out the Eidus. But Rabbi Yehuda was never committed to that position. Adarabah, he could hold like Nardoi, that even if there's a contradiction in the color of the coins, nevertheless, the Eidus is qualified. However, there's a Tosis here, Dira Maskel Hu, on the top of Daf Lamed Aleph, and Tosis is going to tell us, and this is very surprising, that Nardoi are arguing with Rabbi Yehuda. There's machlokas here between Nardoi and Rabbi Yehuda. So apparently Tosis understood that Rava was interpreting Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara accepted Rava's interpretation of Rabbi Yehuda, and we end up with machlokas between Nardoi and Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara now says, let's try to understand the logic of Nardoi Kiman. Based on which logic did Nardoi come to the conclusion that even if there's a contradiction in the color of the mos, of the matbeos, nevertheless we can reconcile, we can qualify the Eidus? Ki Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha. You remember that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha had a case in which one Eid testified on Halva of today, and the other eight on Alvav the next day, of Monday.
Right.
And nevertheless, according to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha, we can combine the two witnesses
based on the amount.
Based on, correctly, the lowest common amount between the two Alvavs, Alvav Sunday and Alvav Monday. So Nardah, now standing on the shoulders of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha, said that if one person says that the Halva was in new coins, and the other eight says it was Halva of old coins, we can combine them together. So Gemara says, "Nay, that's not fair. Your analogy is not a good one." Amar deshamet le Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha. When did we hear that we accept Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha? And we could say that that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha goes as far as Tiva Mitzarif the Eidim. That's only in the case where they testify on two different alvos. Heichadulo mekashi adadi. Aval heichadu mekashi adadi. Mi Omar, did Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha speak about that? Meaning, the alva that took place on Monday is alva. Fine. There's alva on Sunday. Fine. The Eidim are not contradicting each other. Do you follow? Because they're testifying on two different maisim, two different halvos. Rabbi Yishuv ben Korcha says we can gather them together for the lowest common denominator, that lowest sum, right? That has nothing to do with Nardoi. In Nardoi's case, the two witnesses are testifying about the same halva. I mean, so they claim, right? Mm-hmm. They're both testifying on halva of Sunday, and yet one witness says the halva was of new coins, and the other says it was of old coins. That's a contradiction. That's our kasha. That has nothing to do with Rabbi Yishuv ben Korcha. Rabbi Yishuv ben Korcha was not discussing a case of hakasha. He was discussing a case where two witnesses, each one respectively, testified in a different halva. We never had a havamina that we'd have to reconcile these two witnesses. What do you mean reconcile these two witnesses? They're testifying about two different things. But when they're both testifying about the same event and there's a discrepancy, then it's very logical that even Rabbi Yishuv ben Korcha would throw out their edus. Hello, but rather if we analyze the logic of Nardoi, hu diomer kahai tana. Nardoi reflects a different tana, this sanya we learned in a brisa. Oh, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, lo nechleku beit shavi beit sil al shtei kitim or kite edim she achas omeres masayim vi achas omeres mona. So we have two units of testimony, right? Each unit has two witnesses. One unit, one kat says that the loan was 200 zuz. The other kat says that the loan was 100 zuz. That's half the price. Everybody agrees that the nitba, the defendant, will have to pay. How much is he going to pay? Again, one witness says 200, the other says 100. How much is he going to pay? I don't hear any answer. I'm getting nervous. Again, one witness says the halva was on 200. The other says it was on 100. How much will he pay? Why are you laughing at me?
Not laughing at me. I have no idea.
Again, one witness says the halva was on 200. The other said it was on 100. How much can we make him pay?
You can make him pay 100.
100, right? Because again, even the guy who says 200 agrees that there was halva of 100. You know, that was what I've been saying over and over again. Lowest common denominator. Maybe was I shooting against the wall? I don't know. Do you know what I mean by lowest common denominator?
Now we know what you mean.
Well, I didn't see it like that though. That's all, you know, because I thought there's two different amounts. So I thought if you're not agreeing on the exact same amount, then
well, again, we've been discussing over and over again.
There is a bottom common denominator. I said there is something right? They hold in common. They both right. agree that at least it's 100. I never saw that as equivalent.
So again, this is Nardoi. You remember Nardoi says if one witness says it was white coins and the other says it was black coins, we can gather them together and join them and link them. That's exactly what Rav Shimon ben Elazar is saying. He's saying that there was never a machlokes that if one says it was a loan of 200, the other says it was a loan of 100, then we can certainly accept the two of them together as far as 100, even though there's a contradiction between the two Edom. Because even in the case of white coins and black coins, there's a contradiction between the two Edom.
Yeah, but they do agree that there's a loan that's obligated.
There's a loan somehow. So it's at least 100.
And this is a very famous phrase. This Gemara coins an idiomatic phrase that's used all over many different contexts. Yesh b'klal masayim mona. Included in 200 is 100.
Yeah.
So there's no akosh on the first 100.
Well, there you go.
Alma nechluku, where was there? Machlok stream beisil beit shamay al kat achas. There's one group of two witnesses, and one of the two witnesses says that Alvo was 200. The other witness says Alvo was only 100. Shebe chavei omrim nechleka edus. So we have to split their edus, and we cannot accept them as a cat because what was it? Was it 200 or 100? And Beisil omrim yesh b'chal masayim mana. Beisil says that even in that discrepancy over what the sum of money was, and it's either 100 or 200, we can still join up the two Edim and link them together for 100.
Okay
then, so Blinetta will pick this up tomorrow.
I had the same issue as Gershon. I didn't understand that you could do that. I thought that they had to witness exactly the same amount.
Right, well, again, keep in mind that the Gemara is equating now, you know, the...
The case of
white and black with 200 and 100. That's the Gemara's, and we'll try to analyze that tomorrow.